This is a HeadGum Original.
Houston, we have a problem because this week we're talking about Houston band Krungbin and how are we going to do it? How are we going to punch up a song without words? I don't know, but this week we're going to find out.
Let's punch it. You're listening to Punch Up the Jam, the show where we take the greatest hits ever and we improve them. We make them even greater. We punch them up every week. We succeed beyond your wildest dreams in making the songs you already loved way better. I'm one of your hosts, musicologist and elephant trainer, Evan Gregory.
I am Andrew Gregory. I'm the other host. I have been described, this is not a joke, I don't think Evan is an elephant trainer. I would be, I guess he could surprise me still, even though I know almost everything about his life. We've been brothers for 40 years now, but this is not a joke. Variety magazine has described me as a meme savant.
Mm.
Huh, what's that even mean? I don't know, put it in my Twitter bio.
What a compliment. No, I'm not an elephant trainer. Now that we're looking at that statement more closely, we can't even really confidently say that that was a joke. It was just a phrase that resembled a joke.
Could be a prophecy. I'm going to say, Evan, as I brag about myself, I was listening to last week's episode. Last week we punched up I Want It That Way. Last week at the time of this record, I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And after we played the punch up, you were, I think, correctly crowing about a particular lyric that was quite funny. But I thought back to a burn.
Share the lyric so that if people haven't listened to it, you're gonna.
I don't know. You just got to go listen to the episode. You were highlighting some piece of our work that that had really tickled you. And only listening back was I reminded of a burn that you dropped on me that has just haunted me for months. Since I think this was episode 3, I think this is the first episode we did that wasn't Christmas music. We did Bad Company's Feel Like Making Love,
mm-hmm.
which was a punch up that I worked up with one of our music producers, Alex Foote. So you hadn't heard it before we played it at the end of the episode. And at the end, I too was trying to highlight some of what I thought were my successes in our punch up of Feels Like Making Love.
Mm-hmm.
My punch up, of course, was I'm not a virgin. John, 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 John. And as I circled back around to a lyric that I thought you hadn't caught some of the nuances of, you said, Andrew, this is really big virgin energy to play me your punch up and then be talking about, like, whoa, wasn't that line funny? That line was pretty funny. I was disappointed with myself listening back to last week's episode that I had not accused you of having big virgin energy in a song about having missionary style sex. Anyway, missed opportunity. But this is the top of it. This is just us this week. We don't have a guest. We've been trying to on weeks that it's just the two of us do corrections.
Yeah,
so,
consider that a correction.
I'm correcting a misjoke. I'm correcting a misjoke. Maybe I'm correcting your comportment
and
your general comportment and your big virgin energy. But I don't know. If someone missed a really funny line, you kind of got to bring it up. But even while you do it, you know you just have big virgin energy. But we're going to do some other corrections. A lot of these are more technical corrections and not really, I guess, a spiritual correction like that other one.
Mm.
But pull up the corrections, Evan. Let's look at them.
This is our commitment to our audience, our commitment to you that we will be transparent and truthful on this podcast, and every so often, we hit the wrong note.
Somebody's doing the wrong note.
These are corrections. In our episode on Brass Monkey with Amir Blumenfeld, we're talking about the Beastie Boys. We talked about what is the drink, the Brass Monkey, that they're talking about. What are the ingredients that comprise a Brass Monkey? And
so is it something you buy at a tiki bar? Is it a brand of malt liquor? Unclear to us. This was submitted by our listener, Nick Divers, and he suggested that Street Brass Monkey is a 40. You drink the 40 down to the label. So I don't know. What is that? Mm-hmm. Just 10, 15% of the 40.
10% of the drink.
And then you fill it up with something. And I don't think when Nick says something, he means apple juice, ooh, my friends. I think he's talking about the hard stuff. So you're liquoring up your beer, as it were.
So, I mean, I don't know if this is really a correction, since I don't think we were wrong about describing what the Beastie Boys were drinking with their rum cocktail.
Yeah, and we dug into this a little bit. Like, maybe it was, like, kind of the Four Loko of the 80s. Like, maybe there was a... Maybe that was the original thing. The street thing was the Brass Monkey. Mm-hmm. And then some enterprising businessman was like, all these kids are drinking Brass Monkeys. What if I trademarked Brass Monkey and sold it in a store as a premixed cocktail? We found an interview with Mike D where he seemed to suggest that that's what they were drinking, is the pre-made cocktail. It's kind of disappointing that basically
the Beastie Boys like the capitalist version?
Yes, that the Beastie Boys are just like writing a song called like Four Loko, except without properly selling out and getting an endorsement.
So consider this not a correction then, but rather an endorsement of the Street Brass Monkey. Yes. Try it out for yourself.
This what episode brought to you by Brass Monkey, if you're over 21.
Okay, my next correction is a correction to myself, which is a few weeks ago in their episode on Sexy Bitch. As a sidebar, I talked about the rioting in the streets after the Paris premiere of Rite of Spring. I think it had to do...
By Igor Stravinsky.
And I think I casually said that that happened in the 20s. And boy, oh boy, did you music nerds light me up. Because that happened in 1913.
Now, I want to say, Evan, you're saying that the music nerds lit you up. But if I recall from 1 minute ago, you also said that this correction was submitted by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be a little further inconsistency here.
Yeah, the music nerd that is me.
Yeah.
And my projection of what my music history teacher would think of me.
Yes, okay. And you know, I was also helped out. Here we have the handy-dandy spreadsheet for our corrections. If you have a correction, email it in. It even says submitted by Evan, comma, myself. Which leads me to our next correction. It says, Andrew pronounced... This was in the same episode. This was in the Sexy Bitch episode, correct?
Mm-hmm. You brought in we'll call it a bluegrass cover of Beethoven as your walk-in music.
Yes. And I incorrectly for a moment said that this could have been a double correction. I for a moment said Beethoven composed the piano music, or the piano book, what would you call it? From the piano collection, the Well-Tempered Clavier. And then I corrected myself. I caught myself. I said, didn't Bach do that? You said yes. And the correction in the spreadsheet says that I pronounce clavier in a French way, clavier. But it's German. Obviously, Bach is German. And so how should I be pronouncing this, Evan? Read this for me.
Clavier.
The Well-Tempered Clavier. And I will say that this correction is going down like bad medicine for me. I pulled up earlier today. I was looking at the corrections. I saw this correction. I pulled up five different videos of five different experts talking, lecturing about the Well-Tempered Clavier. And at first I was very confident.
Clavier!
All five of these guys are going to say clavier. And I'm going to reign triumphant. And by the time I got to the fifth video, I was like, perhaps one of these five experts will say clavier. And I can say one out of five dentists recommend that you say clavier. But he said clavier too. So I have to acknowledge I was wrong. I pronounced the Well-Tempered Clavier wrong. But that doesn't change, Evan, what the spreadsheet says. Who submitted this? Some lame-o, because j'accuse you, I can't say clavier, but I can't say j'accuse you of putting this in the spreadsheet.
Oh, I stand labeled as a lame-o.
I knew it was you. There was, there was, there was, it, that, that's, I knew it was you. That space was blank, and I just knew I knew that the very same person that had corrected himself about the Rite of Spring being in 1913 and not the 1920s must have told me to pronounce it Glivier. But now I know. You know, it went down like medicine, but I'm better for it. It's like NyQuil. You don't like drinking it, but you sleep through the night. Well-tempered Glivier. I'm going to be cultured for the rest of my life. The last correction is also submitted by myself. Please send us more corrections to the next correction segment on the next Brothers Only episode is corrections sent to us by listeners and not ourselves. It's a big virgin energy. In our episode with Jack and Aaron, listeners might recall that Jack grew up around Baltimore and Aaron grew up around Philadelphia. And I said that as children, listening to I Want It That Way, little did they know that they were like mystically connected by the Susquehanna River. And they laughed and they said, wow, we've never thought about it that way before. That's really great. We should have thought of that.
They were very generous to you.
Well, of course they didn't think of that. Because only one of those places is on the Susquehanna River. That's Baltimore. The Chesapeake Bay turns into the Susquehanna River there, but it doesn't flow to Philadelphia. The Susquehanna doesn't go to Philadelphia. It goes to Harrisburg. And the whatever river goes into Philadelphia, I can never know how to pronounce it. And I've already been called out for mispronouncing Clivier. I'm not going to try to pronounce the main river in Philadelphia. It comes out of the Delaware Bay, not the Chesapeake Bay. What was I thinking? So, frankly, thanks to Jack and Aaron for not just shaming me on the podcast.
Major geography faux pas.
Are you going to take a crack at seeing the river that runs through Philadelphia, Evan? Right there by all the boathouses where you pin guys row. You going to take a crack at it?
The Conshohocken?
All right. Well, if you're listening to the podcast, please correct us on what that river is.
Okay. What river goes through Philadelphia? It's the Delaware River. And then there's...
I'm not going to tell you.
And then there's one other one.
Play the $5 thing. I didn't have one for you this week. Play the $5. I was going to give you a pass.
Then you get $5, $5, baby.
Okay, Evan, this is your least favorite thing on the podcast. If you can get this right, I will Venmo you $5. This week, I could not think of anything that I wanted to ask you about Krungbin or their music that was worth $5. I was going to talk about how we weren't going to do the bit this week because we've done corrections, but I'm going to give you one more guess. What river runs through Philadelphia and comes out of the Delaware Bay? I'm confident that I could spell it, but I don't think I could say it, and that's your last clue.
I'm seething right now. This is a piece of knowledge that is in my brain, but I cannot access it right now.
I just want to try to make this a little more embarrassing for Evan, and I will note that...
I got it! Oh, yes! Woo! Oh, speaking of Clavier and Jacques, I just was having a major case of presque-vous. You know, that feeling that Olivia Rodrigo is about to dump you? the feeling where you got something on the tip of your tongue, but... You know, I've learned that the reason you can't say it is because your brain is actually looking for that piece of information too hard.
Yes.
So it shuts off different pathways.
Exactly.
So I did it. I beat my own presque-vous just now by staring off into the middle distance.
And thinking about Greg Kinnear.
And thinking about Greg Kinnear. Just trying to think about anything else. And so I thought of his poor doomed character from As Good As It Gets. Yeah. And anyway, then it leapt out at me, Schuylkill.
Yes. Although I think you said before we even started the segment, you said the Delaware River. We'll go back and listen later. But after zooming in on a map of Philadelphia, I would have had to give it to you for Delaware. I was thinking of the Schuylkill. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's a double,
I'm
baby.
I'm still not sure.
Philly's got
splits.
The Double.
It splits in Philly. So
not every major city is so lucky as to have the Double flowing through.
So if my math is right, this is episode 16. I'm not sure how many $5 bits we've done, maybe like 13, 12. I believe this is the third time you've earned $5 from me. Congratulations, Evan. We need an award sound for when you get it.
I have applause for myself.
Play in the applause for yourself. Schuylkill. So on to our song this week, Evan, and it's by one of my favorite bands. I wanted to bring this song in, and there's been, I'd say, a little bit of controversy over whether I was allowed to bring the song in. Do you want to elaborate on that?
it ain't hard. Why should we talk about this song on our podcast where we talk about the world's greatest hits and then we make them greater when nobody knows what this song is? We haven't even started playing clips. No one knows what we're even talking about. I'm just going to play the beginning of this song so people have some clue what we're doing. Here's how this song sounds. This is Como Me Quieres by Krungbin.
And my contention is that this is a well-known, well-loved song that many people know. And Evan's, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Evan, but from our conversation earlier this week, your contention is that this song is not famous enough to be on the podcast. Is that correct?
That's correct. Convince me otherwise.
Well, here's what I did. First of all, this is an instrumental song. It's going to pose a challenge, one could say, for us to punch it up. Right?
I'm not opposed to doing an instrumental song. On the show, but I think it is a first.
To my knowledge, there's never been an instrumental on the show. Please correct us if I'm wrong. I know we haven't done an instrumental. Now, I'm just shouting out, if we do another instrumental later, I'm bringing in Take 5 by Dave Brubeck, and you can't stop me. That song is awesome. Can we put it in 4? That's the big question everyone wants to know. But I just think that Krungbin is better known than you think. This song,
Sorry, I'm stuck on that's a great punch idea.
I have heard this song in like so many ads, so many music cues in movies. Like I know that people probably don't know the name Krungbin. I know that people can't like wouldn't be able to name the song off the top of their head, but I feel like you cannot go anywhere in 2022. Any coffee shop, any restaurant, any TV ad has like a relatively large chance of having a Krungbin song in it, and this is their biggest song. That's my take, Evan.
Okay. I mean, I'm open to that, and I'm well aware that like an indie music head is going to know about Krungbin, and maybe people have heard this song in the background and they go to a coffee shop or restaurant like you're claiming, but I think that also sounds a little specific to your experience. Well, what kinds of restaurants are you frequenting? Millennial man? Millennial hipster man? Sure, you don't hear this song going to Applebee's in the real America.
So I wanted to
You hear Dua Lipa and Bad Company.
So I wanted to add a little quantitative research to my qualitative opinion that, hey, I've heard this song a lot. And one thing I thought about was I've watched a lot of Krungbin videos on YouTube, and they have performed at a lot of festivals. A lot of festivals post, you know, their artist sets now. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I was just like, this is a band a ton of people are going to see live. It's just a band that people like live. Their vibe fits for live. They're like a successful instrumental rock band that's just like, if that is loved, it's loved by a certain type of person.
And right. They're the accomplished instrumentalists that can really
live.
Play. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went and looked up all of the festivals they played. And first of all, just like the list of the festivals they played is just absolutely insane. It's like every big American festival, ACL, Outside Lands, Bonnaroo, Newport Folk Festival,
mm-hmm. Three Lollapalooza,
Points, Coachella, Pitchfork Festival, Firefly Festival, Pilgrimage Festival. But what I did is I went back every year and looked at the posters for these festivals. And Evan, they're moving up the poster. You know, 2016, 2017, Krungbin is like down in the fine print mm-hmm. of the ACL poster. Like they're playing the ACL, but you got to go to some side stage. You know, you're like reading the bottom of the poster with a magnifying glass. Like by 2021, 2022, they're not on the top line of the poster. That's a longer conversation about our culture and our civilization. Can a band without a lead singer ever be on the top line of the Bonnaroo poster? Probably not.
No.
But they're on the second or third line of the poster, and that is pretty darn good for Bonnaroo, Coachella, Outside Lands.
Okay, I'll accept your unifying theory of festival posters as maybe a better measure or a more interesting measure than just looking on Google Trends.
Yeah. And that's what I should have done, but I will say the smoking gun for me was a recent festival they played where three of the four bands above them were Dave Matthews Band, the Black Keys, and Tori Amos. It's like, man, if those are the only bands above you at the large outdoor music festival you're playing, like, you're doing really good. You made it, and you certainly made it enough to be on Punch Up the Jam and have your jam punched up.
Okay. I'm excited because how the heck are you going to punch this up? Let's get in. Let's talk about this song, man. Tell me what you love about it. I'm going to go back to the top, just play this intro.
This is probably my favorite song off the album, which is Todo Del Mundo, but it's a just a perfect vibe album that you put on and it just keeps you in the same pocket from track one through, I think, track 10. I think it's 10 songs. Oh, man. Mm. I love this. This part of the song... Well, let's play it for five more seconds so we get to the kind of drop. Now the drums are in.
Downbeat.
So that first, if you pause it for a second, I mean, that first part of the song is so open, and that drum fill is just kills me. And then the drummer, DJ Johnson, is just for the rest of that intro, like, mostly on the hat, and he's doing this fill on the hat that sounds like something you would be taught in a sixth grade band class. I don't mean that in a particular way at all. What I mean is it's like a skill that, like, at your first drum lesson, I feel like your drum teacher would be like, you can play your hat open or you can play your hat closed. And we're going to do an exercise where you hit your hat four times closed and you hit your hi-hat four times open. And then you're going to hit it four times while you open it from close. And then we're going to hit it four times while we close it from where it's open. It's like the drum teacher, your first drum kit lesson is like teaching you the different things a hi-hat can do. But he's doing it at a level here that is like so far above what this first lesson would or could be. That is so locked in and so perfect.
Anybody can chop up a head of lettuce, but we're not all Gordon Ramsay.
And I'll also say, like, when I first started listening to Krungbin, for me it was, like, about the guitar and about the bass. And as I've listened to them a lot more, it's become about a lot more for me about how locked in the grooves are. Can you just play that hat for 1 second back at the top? Back and to the left.
Back and to the left.
Back and to the left.
Here's the hats from the intro.
Yeah, so it's closed, and then he's opening up while he's just playing. Oh, I love it. Just kind of vibey guitar.
It's pure mood, man. But what they've accomplished here is just delicious, man. I feel like any second Uma Thurman is going to saunter in.
It sounds like a movie score without the movie in a good way. Like, it sounds like you could just put this on any action sequence in a movie, any romance scene in a movie, like any car chase in a movie, and it's immediately
any cool. Verizon Wireless ad.
Right, which is why it's in so many ads. One thing I find fascinating about this band is that the guitar player knew the drummer from playing in church together. The guitar player's name Mark Spear, and DJ Johnson was actually the organ player at a church in Houston, which is, I think, is the church that Beyonce is a member of. So you can imagine the music is pretty good there. DJ Johnson's playing organ because he basically said there's too many drummers at the church. Everyone who is at the church who wants to be in the band wants to be the drummer. So he learned to play the organs, playing the organs.
I buy that.
Mark Spear is playing the guitar at the church. So they're hanging out, like, they're friends, and around the same time Mark Spear befriended the bass player, Laura Lee, kind of just randomly, and they bonded over an interest in international music, like Afghani and Irani music. And at the time, she was not a musician. She was a teacher. And basically because of their friendship and because they became obsessed with talking about international music— Mark Spear encouraged her to learn to play the bass, and she just kind of was a natural. She wasn't picking up till she was in her mid-20s, but within like 6 months to a year was like booking gigs on like tours. And within a year or two of that, she was like, what if we were in a band together? They were playing together and needed a drummer, and they went to DJ Johnson, who wasn't really thinking himself as a drummer anymore. He was like, I'm an organ player now. I used to be a drummer, had to quit. Too many drummers. but they kind of said to him, like, no, man, we want, like, these locked-in pocket beats. They almost wanted to, like, think about it as electronic breakbeats you would hear in modern music, but played in like this analog, rounder, warm, like you said, it's like super 60s, 70s influenced way. So his job that he just perfectly understands is just to be like locked into these beats.
Okay, well, let's put that to the test. Let's listen to this next section, listen to a bass and drum rhythm section here.
It's like 98% instrumental. You can hear them like going like, breathing in the background. It's like, there's a couple vocals in here, but it's like only the background vocals. It's like someone dropped out the lead singer.
Yeah, to me, this is dedication to creating a period sound, but doing it with virtuoso execution. Listen to this guitar melody, man. I mean, the song is about the groove. It doesn't exist without the bass and drum groove, and the guitar is just noodling and soloing the whole time. But it's just gorgeous, man. Look at the stuff this guy is finding.
And it's improvisational, but it's also very composed. Like, when you get to the B part, you know what the guitar is gonna play. You could sing along, and it's just a really beautiful composition. But also, like, if you pause it for a second, I have a music theory question, which is, like, is he playing in a different mode than I... Like, he's not playing in just a minor or major scale, right? But he's also not playing in a pentatonic scale. Is he in some other mode?
I think, well, I'll just say a couple of things that I have heard as we're listening to this playback. I don't think he is playing in a different mode than what we are familiar with as Western listeners that listen to pop music. This is a diatonic scale that I'm hearing. Let's see. Let me play this. They're in the key of E-flat minor, and I think he's just playing in E-flat natural minor the whole time. But one thing that I heard is that he is very rarely playing that root. He's very rarely playing E-flat. He starts on the fifth.
Okay.
And... that gives a sense that he's not coming home in the same way that the bass is sitting on that root the whole time. And the rhythmic emphasis that he's putting on, that alludes to other cultures of music. That sounds East African to me, for instance. It's just not, that's not like a common emphasis that you would do if you were like playing a guitar solo in a rock song. Then you take the same scale and you would play something pentatonic, you know, but from the same scale. You know, the bass would be, could be playing the exact same riff. And if the guitar chooses to go and start on that root and do a syncopation that feels like it came from a rock playbook or it came from the blues, then it would sound just more conventional. And instead, he starts not on that root, but he starts on that fifth.
And that's what's the disassociation from the root is what's making me feel like this is not from American music.
I mean, I think that's one contributing factor. That's one really fun thing about listening to this music is that they've successfully evoked a period, but also they are successfully evoking other cultures by being scholars of that music and really pulling in the little motifs and inflections that instrumentalists use when playing music. If you're a Ethiopian car player, or you know, what else is among their influences? Thai music?
They've said they're so influenced by South Asian music. They're influenced by African music. They're influenced by Irani music. They've released covers of their favorite Irani songs. Laura Lee is Mexican-American. But what was the video you were watching, Evan, where the guitarist, Mark, is talking about the Kra?
Well, I just listened to them talking about their influences. So, yeah, the guitarist, Mark Spear, was talking about the Ethiopian Kra, which is like a lyre that is performed by, not by fretting like you do a guitar, where you push the strings down to then make them sound a particular length and play that note. But instead, you're damping all strings at all times, and you only lift up or release the ones that you want to sound.
So it's also like when you're strumming it, it's often all closed. Like every string is closed, so it almost sounds like a washboard or like a drum or like a washboard made of strings. And then
or like a funky rhythm guitarist would play palm muted.
Yeah. So you watch. So he was showing how he tries to incorporate like crowd technique into his guitar playing, and it's not exactly the same, but like doing a ton of palm muting and then releasing strings or fretting a string to like have these notes kind of flash out, and it was really like an amazing look behind the curtain about why this guy's guitar playing sounds a little different than the average bear's, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not all vibe, because I think when we pause it, we were just about to get into the B part. Or I guess it's kind of a C part, right? Because we kind of had the intro, we've gotten a B part, and now we're about to go into the C part, which is kind of like, it's weird to say that there's a bridge in a song with no lyrics, because I think of a bridge as like you're bringing in a new idea with the lyrics usually, but mm-hmm. I kind of think of this as being like the bridge to the song, and it really pumps it up a little bit. You get a few pyrotechnics here.
Yeah, I could be ordering a latte. I could be at a spa.
Yeah, or you could be in the front row at Coachella, just on who knows what, vibing out in the desert. Have you ever been to Coachella, Evan? That's a joke. I know everything about you, and I know you haven't been. Yeah, it's. I don't know. It's not that much louder. It's not. Like, there's that much happening, but just by bringing the guitar up into that higher register, there's just, now they bring it back down to the intro. There's just a different vibe there on that C part. Now, one fascinating thing I found out about their recording process is that it starts with the drums. I don't think that's what you would expect. I think you'd expect that it starts either with the bass and the grooves or with Mark noodling around the guitar. But they kind of pass the writing from one to another. They basically find a bunch of breakbeats that DJ has come up with that they like, and they pass a beat to Laura, and she like will play over it for a really long period of time and record it and pass that to the guitarist, who will basically edit that into a tighter bass line, like find his favorite parts of her composition and improvisations and make it into a shorter thing, and then he'll write over that. And then they'll all go and record together. So it's almost created electronically. And then they go make like an analog version of what they've already created electronically. And they always go record in this like barn in the hill country of Texas. It's a whole thing. They always work with the same engineer. But the one other thing I found amazing about it is that they're coming from this really electronic creation to this analog world that when they went in for their first recording session with this engineer they always use, they all assumed that they would be on a click, right? If you don't know, most modern recordings are created on a click when you're in the studio.
Which means a metronome.
A metronome. All the musicians are listening to a metronome while they play, and it makes it easier for everyone to be together. It makes it easier to say like, oh, we need to go redo that guitar solo. We'll just pull out the guitar and drop it back in because of the click. And we pulled this song, DJ referenced in this interview, this Isley Brothers song that has become an inspiration for him. What's the name of the Isley Brothers song, Evan? I pulled it. I forget what the name of it is.
It's called Living for the Love of You.
Yeah, so play the top of it.
Okay, this is the Isley Brothers' Living for the Love of You.
I did not know this song, but it's an Isley Brothers song, so it rules.
It's
just take my word
smooth.
For it. We're not going to listen to the whole song. And great groove. Really nice groove up top.
Okay.
Okay, so we listen to that groove.
Thank you. Now, why did I just listen to that?
Click over to the last 15 seconds.
Okay.
And like, if you listen through the song the whole way through, it's an amazing groove. It never gets out of the pocket. You know, just think about where that was.
Okay, here it is. I'm playing the last
15
little bit.
Seconds. It is so much faster.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
And like, is anyone complaining about that in the modern world of recording? It's like, whoa, we got to get on the click. It's easier for everybody. But like in that 5-minute Isley Brothers song, is anyone complaining that Ernie Isley is speeding up that, you know, what is that, maybe 10 or 15 BPM? Like, it works in the song.
Yeah, you have to have that, because clearly if you're listening to that song, you're making love and you need a certain amount of acceleration throughout the duration of this song, which is just blatantly of a handbook for intercourse.
That also explains why the last minute of the song is just all of the Isley Brothers loudly smoking cigarettes.
You're saying that's an example of, like, you don't have to play on the click, man.
Yeah. Honestly, the last time I recorded an album, I assumed we were going to record on a click. And we had an amazing drummer, Anthony LaMarca, who plays guitar in the band The War on Drugs, played drums on my album. And my producer, I was like, okay, so we got to get on a click. And my producer, Jay, said, like, I think we'll be okay with Anthony playing drums. Like, it's going to be close enough. And Jay had faith, and the engineer for Krungbin, and Krungbin had faith that, like, if we get in and out of the pocket a little bit, like, guess what? It's going to be because it works. It's going to make the song breathe. And, like, if we need to replace something in the recording, we'll be able to go punch it, or we can just record it again.
I don't know. I don't know. I think there's a lot of bands that saying we don't need a click on this is like real famous last words situation.
You're right. You know? Maybe the reason it works for Krungbin is because this guy is just a generational talent.
Maybe it works for them because they're really good at playing instruments, and everybody else recording in their bedroom should stick with the metronome. Hey, could have used a little bit of that in this song.
You think?
Yeah,
I think it's in there. I think they just mixed it really low.
Yep. I'm going to email them and send them this sample from the Dua Lipa song of just people yelling.
They use the oldest recording trick in the book, which is they drenched it in reverb, they mixed it down, mm-hmm. they panned it to the left, they put a compressor on it, mm-hmm. then they deleted it. Yeah, you did it. You got crickets on the soundboard.
You know, one thing I'm really missing, I'm just thinking about how we can punch up this song. Like, we don't have much to talk about on this episode, I gotta be frank, Andrew, because no one is saying words. You're talking about how they have this really unique composing strategy, which to me just sounds like the Postal Service. Okay. The band I'm talking about.
Right, emailing just, files back just and forth.
We emailed files. Imagine a digital workflow where we email files back and forth. Yeah, it sounds like everybody. And their process is really streamlined by the fact that they didn't start with any words. They don't have words. Words, words, words. Everyone's process is about, like, do you write the words first or you write the melody? Well, just all of that is out the window for this band. And another major flaw that I am hereby submitting as my creative brief for the punch up is, yeah, everybody loves this chick playing bass. She's really cute. She's got great grooves. What? She was self-taught? Wow, so cool. But she never slaps. She doesn't slap the bass.
Really? That's a problem for you? Oh, get that out of
here. Yeah, baby.
Get that out of here.
No, let's start slapping the bass.
Slapping the bass is the worst.
Slap me.
Slapping, one of my worst concert experiences of all time involved a slap bass. Which was when Shuggy Otis, the great Shuggy Otis, went on tour after years of being a recluse.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go see him here in Brooklyn. And, like, was he at the top of his game? Maybe not. It's been like 40 years since he put out his amazing album. Is it Inspiration Information or Information Inspiration? I always forget. But the bass player he had, every note he played on the bass was a slap bass note. None of the bass on the album is a slap bass note. I would have doubled. I think a lot of people at the show just would have paid the bass player an extra $10 to not play slap bass. He was great at it, but just why do it?
I can't believe you actually went to see someone named Otis.
Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis.
I did go see Otis. Now, another conundrum for the band. Now, I don't know if this is a conundrum for the song, but I will say the name. We've said it a lot of times on the show, Krungbin.
Mm-hmm. Krungbin.
Are we saying it right?
Krungbin.
Who knows?
Krungbin.
The reason their name is Krungbin is because when they were formed, Laura Lee was learning Thai. This is a Thai word she liked, her favorite Thai word. It means airplane. But they have openly...
It means airplane in Thai?
It means airplane in Thai. But they have openly said in interviews, like,
I assumed this was nonsense or onomatopoeia for, like, you know, you dropped your racquetball.
No, it's Thai for airplane. They've said in interviews, like, yeah, we kind of dropped the muffin on this one. Like, if we had expected to be successful, which we didn't, because we're a three-piece jazz fusion world music band, if we'd known we were going to be successful, we would have picked a name that people could remember and pronounce.
Never sympathized with them more as a person who operates a YouTube channel called Shmo Yoho. Now you've brought me around. Now I'm on their side.
So So that's another thing to think about. You know, the name of the song is in Spanish. The name of the band is in Thai. The song doesn't have any words, which is keeping them off the top row of the poster. If we could get words into the song, any words, they could maybe rise from being on the third row of posters mm-hmm. to the top row of posters for the top festivals of yep. the world.
And if they started slapping the bass. Heck yeah.
Ooh, stop it. Stop it. Put the grungbin back
yeah,
on. Put
baby,
the
grungbin yeah.
back on.
Oh, we're going to slap at a bass. Okay, let's listen. This is when they bring the intro back. Let's just play this out to the end of the song. It is just samesies here on. I mean, you don't hate it because it's pure mood. But yes. What is there to talk about, man?
That's the thing. When grungbin is on, you don't have to talk about anything.
No, you just experience mindfulness.
You just vibe.
Yeah, right into your oat milk.
I mean, I don't remember what the name of the engineer is, but like, also this just sounds great. The recording of the drum sounds, the like you were talking about the timbre of the guitar. It's just like, this just sounds real. This was really, really well like recorded and produced.
Man, why didn't you say that about Paul Rodgers and Bad Company? He sounds great.
I actually did. Go back and listen to that episode. I talked about how good the snare drum sound was. Count it. Okay, go back and listen to it. I talked about how good the snare drum sound was. I called it lush.
Back and to the left.
It's like a diatonic scale, but the
oh, that really cool end for the guitar.
Yeah. Okay, man, this is pretty far afield for this podcast. This is not a classic rock hit. This is not a chart topper from the 90s.
Evan, you set him up, I'd knock him down.
Yeah, brother. Okay, well, you have brought this song to the pod. I've given you my pitch. We got to slap at a bass.
I'm not going to do it.
Let's take a break and
100%
then
100% no.
I'm going to hit cut on this recording, then I'm going to sell you on slapping a bass. Let's take a break and then get to a punch up.
Okay. I'm ready. We are back, and Evan, I have to start with a confession to you.
Okay.
And that confession is that this punch-up has been a labor of love for me, not for hours, not for days, not even for months, but for years, since long before we were even being considered to be the hosts of this podcast.
What are you even saying to me right now?
It all started with a little ride to JFK Airport. I know that doesn't make a lot of sense as like a starting point for how did I do this punch-up for Krungbin, and you know, frankly, I picked the Krungbin song because I already had this in my back pocket, and because I love Krungbin. I was picked up a couple years ago here at our office. I was going to JFK at the end of the day. I think I was flying to LA, and I got picked up by the coolest Uber driver I've ever had. You know, it's like sometimes you have a conversation with an Uber driver where you're like, one of us doesn't want to be having this conversation, but I can't tell which one of us it is. I'm just going to keep talking. Mm-hmm, usually yeah. You're not talking.
Yeah, you're just doing it to be polite.
Yeah, usually you're just like sitting there. This guy was jamming Krungbin when he picked me up, and we started talking about music. We started playing each other songs because I was like, oh, I like Krungbin too. And
he set a mood. He was setting a mood in his car and you liked it.
Yeah. And we just also, I will note, he took maybe one of the most amazing routes to JFK I've ever taken, like all local during rush hour traffic. Got me there so fast. Mm-hmm. His day job was being a FedEx driver. So
as
like
a real root head, he was winning
yes.
you over.
As a
you
know, root head, he
you're
was
both
already winning
just a
me
couple
over.
Of map daddies.
Yes. Doing all this local stuff through Bushwick so he can hit Pennsylvania Avenue. I loved it.
Ooh.
And he was impressed because I was like, you going to Pennsylvania Avenue, buddy? And he was like, oh, you know about Pennsylvania Avenue. Real connect. Anyway.
Oh, man, this is a serious dad energy. You guys just buttering each other
up. So we're
up.
Talking about Krungbin. We're talking about stand-up comedy. He loved Aziz Ansari. And he also was talking about, he was kind of reveling in that he was an outlier for being a lover of Krungbin and a lot of the music we were talking about. He was born and raised in the Marcy Projects, where Jay-Z grew up. He was a black guy, and he kind of reveled in the fact that he was the guy, like, driving around the block playing music that everyone was like, what? You're playing what? Like, blasting Krungbin out of his windows. And the other thing he loved blasting was, like, Rat Pack crooners. I'm not, like, much of a Sinatra guy.
Okay.
I've become more of a Sinatra guy because I've married into a family from New Jersey. They aren't, like, crazy for Frank Sinatra, but it's just, like, a little bit more of a thing for them than it was for us, I guess. It's just, like, part of...
They don't think they're crazy for Sinatra, but it's just in the water.
Yes, yes. Exactly. And he, but he was a real lover of Frank Sinatra, and he was like, oh, man, on a Saturday, Sunday afternoon, there's nothing I love more than just, like, rolling down my windows, blasting Frank Sinatra, and driving around my neighborhood getting the weirdest looks from other people that are like, why is this black guy blasting Frank Sinatra? And he's like, hey, Frank Sinatra rules.
You know what? Sometimes that summer wind is blowing in, and you got to let people know about it.
Yeah. I mean, growing up in the South, there was not a lot of Frank Sinatra in our household. And I remember being in a bar in Europe when a Frank Sinatra song came on, and I was, like, totally oblivious to, like, why Frank Sinatra was good. I was kind of like, oh, that's just an old guy that sings. And it was that song, When I Was 21, it was a very good year.
Yeah.
It's late at night. I'm, like, drinking in Barcelona. And I, like, went to the bartender and was like, who's singing this
Who
song?
Who is this indie singer-songwriter?
Yeah. And the bartender gave me a look like I was the dumbest person.
He was listening, like, to the most famous American singer.
He was like, Frank Sinatra? And I was, I had, like, a combo look on my face that was like, Frank Sinatra is good. And also, I'm dumb.
So anyway, that's how you found out you were dumb.
So we befriended each other. We talked about Krungbin a lot. He did say, and Krungbin has done some albums with Leon Bridges now, so they've done some albums with a lead vocalist. But he had one complaint about Krungbin, which he was like, man, I love the vibe. Sometimes you just want someone to haul off and sing a great lead vocal over this. We talked the whole way to the airport. We followed each other on Instagram. We're mutuals now.
Oh, wow. You made it official.
He dropped me off at the airport, and I sat down at my gate, and I just started thinking, you know what? This guy's just randomly, like, offhandedly pitching this idea. What if Krungbin had a lead singer? And I'm honestly one of the few people in the world that could make that happen for this guy. I can't go to Krungbin and say, hey, get a lead singer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I would do that because I like their albums, but I could experiment with it.
You have expertise in remixing and punching up.
And I came back here into our studio and I worked for a long time to determine what the perfect lead singer for Krungbin would be. What would please my Uber driver the most? Because I knew I had to send it to him when it came out. Anyway, the name of this new group, Evan, is Krungbinatra. And now.
So I think final curtain, my friend, I'll say it clear,
I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I don't think I've subtracted from the vibe.
I'm just soaking this in for a minute. I've got to absorb this.
Oh, here comes the B part.
I have to fully grok this.
Ooh. Oh, still space for the little guitar lick?
Man. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Golly, man. I mean,
okay, wait for this.
It just fits perfect.
My way. I don't know why, but I just love that he hangs on that instead of going down. I've had a few, but then again. I mean, really, the question now is, what song did I punch up? Did I punch up Como Me Quieres, or did I punch up My Way? Now it's in a minor key. It's a little sadder to me. He's talking about it My Way. It's like, this is kind of a song about the end of your life. Now it's vibey and minor.
I don't know, man. I mean, I have a lot to say about this, but I don't particularly feel like talking over this track because it's so delicious.
We'll get ready for the C part.
Oh, come on.
Spit it out.
Ooh. I faced it all. Oh, I love that reharm. And
I stood tall. I mean, it just and fit perfectly.
There were times I'm sure you knew when I fit off more than I could chew. But through it all,
oh, golly. Oh, man.
It's so haunting.
Oh, man. Oh, that's really good. It's just... Let's just let it play out. I don't really feel like making jokes about this even.
My share of boozing and the now its tears subside. I find it all so amusing to think I did all that. And may I say,
that sounds like he's about to cry.
In a shy way. Oh no, no, not me. I did it my did it my way. My way.
Ooh.
Oh, I stand and I clap for that.
I know we're supposed to make the punch-ups funny. I don't think that... This one is funny.
We can do whatever we want.
Are you going to laugh at it? No. Will you be haunted by it? Yes. And speaking of haunting, because this was such a labor of love, to my knowledge, this has never been done for one of the punch-ups before, but I cut a whole video of Frank Sinatra singing with Krunk Banatra.
What?
And so I'm going to post that video on our Patreon only. If you want to see Frank Sinatra singing Como Mi Quieres, I don't know what the name of the song would be now that it's
well,
my way.
I think the title of the song would have to be My Way in
you
Spanish.
You get that in there somewhere, yeah.
Como Quieres Mi Manera.
Yes.
How Do You Want
yes.
My Way?
So if you want to see the video of How Do You Want My Way, I'll have Evan say it again in Spanish.
Como
Spanish
Quieres Mi Manera.
If you want to go watch the video, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Gregory Brothers. Usually you just get all the punch-ups, all the MP3s of the punch-ups, but this week you get to watch the video too.
A bonus video?
A bonus video. It's
Be still my heart.
It's haunting.
Cuidado mi corazón.
Yeah.
This is a better rendition of My Way. You've accidentally punched up that song, a song that sucks for different reasons.
Why does that song suck, Evan?
No, this My Way is like nearly a perfect song. I think its place in culture sort of sucks because people mostly just take it at face value as a song of pride about like this guy did things right by doing it his way. Where I don't know, I guess maybe it says more about me than about this wonderful song. But when you listen to it, just between the lines, he's just talking about the people he hurt.
Yes, it's kind
he's
of
just
like,
talking about how he lived his life elbows out my way. Like people asked me to bend, and I didn't. And it's a point of pride
yes.
that he lived his life in a manly way and didn't bend. But what I hear is the people he hurt.
Yes, it's like the Godfather of songs, and that like
yeah.
like the Godfather. People are like, oh, I love watching the Godfather. Look at how they did business. But it's like
yeah, these macho guys.
These people are the antagonists. Like because they're on screen the whole movie, people have come to see them as protagonists. But they're the bad guys.
Yeah, this is the original tragic hero.
And he's talking about how he is the bad guy, and he sees that now, and instead people are like, yeah, I did it.
So that is what I love yeah. about what we just heard, which we're now calling Como Quieres Mi Manera, which is yeah. this has more clearly depicted the lyrics of My Way as tragic.
The minor key, I think, adds a lot of pathos to the song.
I love it for that reason.
Okay.
After this, we're coming back and talking about our walk-in music when I've done crying.
Well, thanks for giving this punch-up a chance, Evan, even though it wasn't about missionary-style sex.
Hey, it was good, but they can't all be perfect. I chose my walk-in music this week based on the prompt of retro-sounding music. I was just thinking about Krungbin and how their sound is, you know, derived from all these other eras and geographies. And I thought about a contemporary artist that I like who has drawn their inspiration from, like, old American songbook stuff and has succeeded by putting it in a now aesthetic, sort of proving the greatness of the form. Like, and so my scenario is, I think, all the more appropriate having now just recorded this whole episode and listened to, like, a somewhat sincere but wonderful punch up. My scenario is kind of sincere. I just had my anniversary last week. I've been thinking about how I celebrate differently the last couple years. We haven't really gone out that much at all.
13th anniversary
period. Yes. Thanks for remembering.
13th anniversary.
And, so my scenario is walking into my own anniversary that you're pandemically celebrating at home.
Okay.
And
just you and your wife.
Yeah. And I hit play on this tune, which is by a guy named Bruno Major. And this is a song he wrote called Nothing.
Track suit, some red wine, movie for two. We'll take off our phones and we'll turn on.
Oh, I'm crying. Oh.
We'll play Nintendo. Though I always lose, because you are TV while I'm watching you.
Oh, it's so sweet. I will say, I'm sitting all the way across the room, Evan, and I read the artist, because I'm so far away, as Bruno Mars.
Of course. How
and I
you
thought
not?
This was
it's,
a whole...
It's probably plaguing him his whole career.
I thought this was a whole joke misdirect that you were going to be like, it's a quiet night with my wife, and then you were just going to play like Uptown Funk. And so that has really led me to be doubly emotionally smashed by this song, that I was
you
ready for
I
the
was
joke.
Misdirecting
I was,
you.
Yes. I thought it was just going to be a gag, Uptown Funk. Instead, I'm thinking about watching my wife watch TV, which is very sentimental for some reason.
And I played something real.
Yeah.
And you'll catch me crying. We're not making out on the boat in the rain.
I first found this guy from this cover of Like Someone in Love.
What a beautiful song.
It's a beautiful song. He composed something really tight and beautiful here, just using this old song form and proving that that form is eternal. I think it's great. The tune is Nothing. The artist is Bruno Major.
My scenario, I was coming into the office today. I didn't know what my walk-in song was going to be. I walked into the coffee shop, and they were playing one of my favorite songs. So I was like, oh, this is going to be my walk-in song. I came into the office, I Googled it, and I found out that one of my favorite bands covered it. So I just decided to mix it up. I was like, I'm not even going to do the original. I've never heard this cover before today. I don't know how I'd missed it, but I'm going to play this song while I'm walking into my 25th high school reunion. The Doors burst open. My hair is flowing behind me.
Perfect scenario.
I don't look as good as I did at my 10th reunion when I look like really good, but I still like hopefully look better than the other people there, which is, you know, what you're trying to do at your 25th reunion. So the Doors burst open, and this is what everybody hears, Evan. You know, the little instrumental thing.
Ba-da-da-da.
So I'm not denying the nostalgia of the situation. I'm leaning into the nostalgia. If, for my mind, there's no better thing to put in a song to tear, like, there's no better thing to put in a song to pull up my heartstrings and think about the passage of time than just mentioning months. All you have to do is say, like, the word September, the word December, the word November, the word April, and you've got me thinking about, like, the life cycle of a human being. So, like, you're just, you're listening to this song at your 25th reunion, and you're just thinking back to those glory high school days, the best years of my life, and how we've all changed.
Yeah, boy, September, that was a month I saw many times when I was back in school.
So this is a Big Star song. I love Big Star. They're kind of like a band that wasn't really successful when they were making albums, but has become like a huge cult classic band. And this is a cover of September Girls by The Bangles, the 80s mega band that did Eternal Flame and Walk Like an Egyptian covered this.
Awesome pick.
Great guitar solo, too. Yeah, man, it's making me sentimental.
Man, you only get to play the reunion card, the high school reunion card, once in this walk-in music segment, and you've just played it.
Yeah, I think you do.
You don't get to choose that as your scenario anymore. Also, like, everyone needs a banging song for that scenario, though.
For the slow-motion hair effect I want to be going on, like, my 25th reunion is only a couple years away. I maybe shouldn't get a haircut between now and then if I really want to have it up in a in like a man bun. And, like, rip it out and shake my hair out while I'm walking in. And everyone's looking over at me and going, like, wow, that 43-year-old isn't bald.
You
like
need
these
a lot
other
of runway.
43-year-olds.
You need a lot of runway to get that hair length going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, like, I'm really counting on a lot that I haven't gone bald in the next couple years. Mm-hmm, but I think that could be a real thing to show off to my peers is my long, 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 luscious hair.
It's just the best possible scenario for a walk-in song because the stakes are so high. You really want to be liked and you really want to prove people wrong about you. But it's more than that. There's also like a whole lot of formative baggage there.
Yeah, but you also don't want to act like you changed too much, man.
No, you're still
you're still yourself. You're still the wacky little kid you were at 16.
Thanks, everybody. That's our show.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
You finally used it. The station ID that Jason Gore, our favorite classic rock DJ, recorded when he came in to talk about I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty. He recorded a bunch of classic rock station IDs for us.
Yeah, 2 months later, I finally remembered to put it on the soundboard, but it's because...
You know, just me being open to life.
So please come back and listen again next Thursday. Go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe. Leave us a review. We would appreciate it so much if you left us a review. Like we said earlier, you can see the video of Krung Binatra on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Gregory Brothers. And check out the show. You can follow Punch Up the Jam on Instagram or Twitter, or there's a subreddit. Those are all really fun places to connect with us and be reminded when new episodes come out.
And mostly great ways to DM us and tell us what songs to punch up.
Yes, tell us what songs to punch up. Honestly, tell us how to punch them up. And if you have a really good idea, maybe we'll just do it. We won't have to work that
week. I don't mind. We will. It's not stealing your idea if we give you credit and then invite you on the show as a guest. Who knows what could happen?
Yeah, tell us what songs we should punch up.
Yeah, you get in here and tell Andrew to slap at a bass.
No, not to slap bass. Don't slap it.
So, there's a woman that you know as... Huh?
Her name's Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
But you call her Dua Peep.
Dua Peepa.
Her name's Dua Lipa, but you call her Dua Peep.
Dua Peep, I'm sorry. Well, apparently her real name is Dua Lipa.
That was a HeadGum Original.